happy to do something before you're done. Something like this would be the trace of H data. I think it's some quantity like that that actually just satisfies the plane wave equation.
I think that exercise to work it out.
The Einstein equation.
Okay.
Ends up looking like that. Or with a source if you want. It's not particularly hard to do that. I think that'd be a good exercise for any of you to find the wave equation for a small gravitational perturbation. Neglect H squared, right? So it's just a linearization of the Einstein equation. And you can show that a certain combination, you're free to choose any coordinates at all. So, make them so aside. I forget, you might have to choose some wonky coordinates. But
why would you say 1 over length squared as opposed to just 1 over length
like
a normal wave
length? I'm sorry, length squared, not 1 over length squared. I said it wrong. Because the metric is what gives rise to length.
Oh, of course.
Length squared.
Squared.
So you put the units in the field. So to get a length squared. So that's what I would say. But then, you can divide by, powers of G and C and, whatever to make it.
Okay, I'm just curious because he's got a good number of waves in the intro, intro to E&M class. And he's giving them a problem on gravitational waves,
Who's doing this?
Shane.
Shane was probably working on that.
So they say that H has no dimensions, like the amplitude, so.
What is it in the Einstein equation? You've got G and nu is 8 pi G over C to the 4. Some horrendously big power here times G and nu. But that, of course, connects inverse length with energy, but some power of that thing, maybe you could get rid of the units, put it in Planck units.
Oh, okay.
I bet you're working in Planck units. Wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
It's a pure number.
Okay.
Don't know what the units are.
Okay.
How about measure it?
Okay.
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Other things from the book.
Good. All right. Somebody's reading the book. I like that.
So, on page 112.
112, got it.
Let's see. The paragraph above 5.21, second sentence.
Okay. The integrand is independent of t. Yeah, I actually worked through that. That's kind of funky, isn't it? Let's look at one of these. We're talking about the expressions for the raising and lowering operators in terms of integrals of derivatives of the t. And let's have a look at that. Anybody need this? Dealing with, and that's for the free field. What happens here? Let's go ahead and write this all out. So we've got e to the plus I kx, so it's going to be I. Say, e t minus e dot Okay, exponential factor, then we have the time derivative of phi, and then we subtract the other way, where we've got, we pulled out an IE from the time derivative. So we're looking at something like this. And the claim is that this integral is independent of time. How do we see it?
When
phi is the solution, phi is satisfies the free field equation, right?
Last semester you had t equals zero for phi.
Yeah, we had t equals zero in some cases, not to worry about it, but we may not have had. Other times we didn't, and it didn't cause us a problem. What I'm thinking happens here is that phi itself has the conjugate with this exponential factor. So in here, all right, phi has an expansion where we're looking at a d3 t, so we have a e to the minus I dt minus dx, something like that, and the a dagger term. The normalization stuff. So we're going to pull down something similar. We're going to pull down an E here. In fact, this derivative, this one, is going to pull down minus I E. And so the question is about the time dependence, but maybe we need to put in both terms. Remember what we're doing. We're inverting this expression to solve for that coefficient. So, at some level, substituting this into here is going to be an identity. We'll just get A back. The A dagger piece cancels. And the A piece is going to add. The time dependence here. These things are Fourier modes. Okay, if we're in the classical theory, A is a function of E and T, and the starting point was a D4 X here, probably with some 2 pi's, 2 pi squared. We can choose any normalization we want, but then there was a delta function in energy in order to satisfy the wave equation.
Right.
Like this. We integrated over that delta function, got 2 terms, and this thing never did depend on time. So what happens is E is set equal to a function of T, and these A's end up depending only on momentum. So they've never depended on time.
Right.
And maybe that's the clearest way to think about that.
I see, too, like, you put in that phi into the equation above, and, yeah, it's going to be
identity. They cancel.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Because you get two different signs from when you take the derivative, they end up with different signs, so that when you put it into that up there. So
yeah, the this dividing key gives a plus I E as a 2-term scan.
Right.
But, like I say, that's sort of tautological. We get this equation by inverting them. So they're the same equation. So we're just really going to get A equals A there. But the real way to see it is to look at the solution for phi, where A is a function of energy and momentum. And you integrate that past the delta.
So, then my next question is that
Mm-hmm.
If you look at 5.21,
mm-hmm.
now we have this A dagger with the N there. But the A N sort of implies some time dependence. It means A dagger at the limit of T goes to negative infinity. But since it didn't start with any time dependence, how is that any different?
Okay, the thing is, we're going to end up going to a Heisenberg picture. And Heisenberg makes the operators time dependent, even though they don't start out that way.
Okay.
Right. So in the Schrodinger picture, the A operators are time independent, but they're going to be necessarily time dependent in the Heisenberg picture.
Okay.
And by the time you get to the in states and the out states, we're talking Heisenberg picture.
Okay.
So that's where it comes from.
This is when in class we were confused about why the z was to the minus 1/2.
Yeah, did you start that?
That first line there, 5.21, he slips in phi in, not phi, so that when you end up with the phi, you have to put the z on the other side of the equation. So if you look at his definitions up above,
yeah,
it's phi. I mean, phi goes to z to the 1/2. Times phi n, but when he inserts it into there with that limit, he's saying that that's phi n.
Oh, we're starting with phi n and replacing it by phi.
Yes, that's where the...
Okay, I got it, okay. Okay, so, yeah. A n in terms of phi has the 1 over root 3.
Right.
Good. Thank you. Put that up. Okay,
It's related to this. Okay. Oh, it's writing up the notes. Okay. This is what we had last semester, okay, for one of the operators.
Yeah.
I'm not getting, you know, like this D with the double arrow on top. And I tried to plug it in there, but it just didn't seem to quite work.
Okay, let's have a look at
it. I put in a CNH bar, so that's what I, you know.
Okay.
But still, it's not.
That's right. So your claim is that what we got...
I'm trying to get to what you have on the board over there.
Yeah. A of Q is, let's see which expression we want to go with here.
I start with it, yeah.
Oh. Okay, so you're the root E over 2 time integral E3 x minus pi over H times 2 dot x. Then H bar over C is 0 5. Was this when we set the time to 0?
Right.
And we just argued that it comes out okay anyway, even if you don't. So let's not worry about the time dependence. And let's see what happens.
Okay.
Okay, so these E's, what's the thing that's E inside, this factor? So we have I D3X, this Kappa, this balance trunk. Go for it. Okay, then if I pull out this E, I've got, we can write it as E over CH bar in the denominator, then this looks like a root 2 over E in the denominator. So I'm taking both of these and I'm stuffing them inverted down below. So we're going to end up with a root 2E here, which is the way he writes it. The C and H bar. Would you rather keep those in?
No, I always put them in there because otherwise, if I check for units, I get confused.
You get used to thinking of mass as an inverse length. You get used to thinking of energy and momentum as inverse length. This is sort of what happens when you work with a bit. The thing that is good to learn to be able to do is to know where to put them back in. You can carry them along. There's no harm in that. And anytime you really want to see them, I'll be happy to stick them back in and you'll figure out where they go. Because, With H bar of C, the two things that you're making one by your choice of unit. So, you know, C is one if you're talking about the, you know, light years per year.
Right.
That's how fast light travels. One. So, you know, that's what we're doing. That's all we're really doing. But anytime you need to convert between meters and seconds, you know you're going to put in a C. Anytime you need to deal with a mass, the only unit choice of the mass is H bar. So you match the number of energies or you know kilograms. You match with an equal number of H bars, and then you can always tune the seconds and meters using factors of C. So that's sort of the order that you figure it out. Get the kilograms first with H bar, and then pick up the time and length with C. We can do some examples if that helps. Anyway, let's press on with this. I've gotten into that, but over on the other side now. Here's our exponential on our H bar. Let's see, Q is a four momentum, right? Q dot X. Then here, we've gotten rid of that factor, so we have a D0 I. And let me distribute this. She said we had no erasers. Maybe we need to use some new erasers. Why should the eraser better? They put something in them, some solvent maybe. D0 I. And here, we have the inverse of this factor, so we have an IE. That's the IE we've written here, and we can put in the H bar C there. And now we have, once again, this exponential minus I over H bar through dot X and a phi. That I have got here. And now, what we want to do is think of this as what? Well, we've got a minus sign here, so let's keep that sign because we're going to get. Let's see. E is. What's our one? I'm trying to remember the signature we're using here.
I think we're using E plus and the other momentum minus, yeah.
Yeah, so Q dot X in Maggiore's signature. Which signature are you using in your notes?
I'm doing the plus minus minus minus.
Okay, so this is ET minus C
right.
Dot X, and that's CT and E over C, so these work out there.
Right.
Okay, so when we have E to the minus I over H bar, ET minus C dot X, then we have up here minus I E over H bar C. Looks to me like we can regard that. Here's an I E over H bar as the coefficient of that T. So if I write 1 over C D D T, which is, that's D D X 0. Right. So we're okay there. That's going to pull that down. So just that same factor. Minus P dot X. So now the only problem is we've got a sign funny. The double arrow D is that derivative minus this one. So why is it plus?
Should it be a positive I over H bar? I could have a negative when I worked it out before, but.
Positive here?
Well, up here, that e to the I over originally. So that's got to be positive, yeah.
I'd be good with that. Oh.
So I have a negative, but, you know, I could have messed up too with those. Well, I'm lost.
I
it.
See.
Yeah.
Just
see the positive over here.
Yes, the positive there. Oh, okay. Here's where it comes from.
Okay.
The expansion of phi, we've written it here. The A comes in with a minus. To do the inverse Fourier transform, you want to multiply by the opposite sign with a Q.
Okay.
Right. So it would be a plus. So this factor would be a plus that you multiply by. So remember what we're doing. We have an expression for phi. We multiply by the opposite factor and integrate, and that's going to free up the e to the minus I e t over here.
Okay.
So that does need to be a plus. A plus here and here then means, we have this plus essentially here. So that's still true, just changing the sign. So now the minus sign stays there. I'll go through that in a minute.
Okay.
So what we're getting is d cubed x. Then here we have a root 2 e. We've got a 1 over h parsed t. So somewhere here we've got an h parsed t. This I'm just going to pull out. Then here we have a root 2 e. And then this is, how to say this? What we've just shown down here is that this whole factor is 1 over c ddt of the exponential. That minus sign stays. So now the only question is, what happened to the c? E over c is a momentum. Oh, ddx 0. This is 1 over c ddt as well. So that's okay. So if we call that ddx 0, then we've got the same thing in both places. So this is d0 acting both ways. Once on phi here, and once on the positive exponential, d dot x. So I think we've got it. We can worry about the h bar c if you like. That's the connection between root energy and d cubed x, probably. I'm feeling good about our progress. I want to keep just carefully working through everything here. I was looking ahead and we're actually getting to QED. we're really going to reach it and do some problems. If you guys are good with that, this is probably the best way to get this material to learn how to do QED calculations. There are different ways to approach it, but this is probably as good as any. We'll get there. So, one of the difficulties with field theory is there are a lot of math tricks. Rewriting three-dimensional things as four-dimensional things and then manipulating or putting in time ordering and then shuffling things because they're under time ordering and you can. And, you'll see a bunch of these things. And it's hard to remember them all, you get to a point and, what's the manipulation of the expression we need to get it where we want it to be? And people have worked it out, but it's a little bit of, putting one foot in front of the other and, again, looking around and saying, oh, we're doing QED still. What we will derive from this whole procedure is a set of Feynman rules, a systematic method for calculating perturbation theory in scattering problems or atomic emissions, absorptions, or any number of different calculations you can do. So in the end, you arrive at something that can be made fairly streamlined. Once you understand that it actually all does come from field theory consideration. we could start and say, okay, here are the Feynman rules. You know, do this and this and this and calculate these integrals, and that'll be the probability for, a photon to pair create or something. But, you know, it really comes from logging through this kind of stuff. So let's log. Are there other questions? Did we get to this? Is this what you wanted?
Yes, except for the positive sign, because I have a minus here, you know, for the use of the IO raised bar Q dot X. Yeah, but.
Okay, so the way we get this expression, and, you know, maybe we had sign on when we did it one of our days before, but this is pretty much the starting point. Let me just remind you of the first steps of that, and you'll far enough to see that it should be a positive sign, whatever we.
I agree with that one though. Yeah.
Okay. But so let anyway. Me can I erase some of this so we have psi is an integral d3p. I think we ended up with 2 pi cubed and a root twice dp here.
Mm-hmm.
Then A dependent upon P, E to the minus I, and then that's just our four-dimensional P dot X is E K minus P dot X. And then we have a dagger of P, E plus I, P X. So this is our solution for phi. Our goal is to solve for A in terms of phi and its derivatives, or phi and pi. We also had an expression for pi, which was basically mm-hmm. phi dot.
Phi mm-hmm. dot, right.
And if we have, we'll need both of those, but if I take phi, and I multiply by e to the plus I cubed x, right, the other sign here. And now I integrate d3x. Right, that's going to take an inverse Fourier transform on the three momentum here. So we can write that d3p, and then we'll have a d3x as well, 2 pi cubed root twice dp. Then here a of the e to the minus I, and we end up with a p minus q here dotted into x. And then the second one, it'll be the other sign, but we're going to get rid of this term anyway. It'll be a p plus q here, dot four-dimensional x. Then we do the x integral, and we get some delta functions here. And then the integral over p is going to pull out that a. So let's go ahead. We do the d3x integral. So an integral over this d3x leaves, all right, we have ap e to the minus I, and then we have e to the p minus dq times t that we're not transforming. And then we get a 2 pi cubed del 3 of p minus q, right, from the integral of the x over that. Then a similar thing here, but it's a delta of t plus. And then we can do the integral. The 2 pi cubed terms all cancel. tidy elbows. Then an integral over 3 momentum delta function is going to set all of the p's equal to q, plus or minus q, depending on which term. And it's going to set ep equal to eq in any case, because if 3 vector p equals plus or minus 3 vector q, the energies are equal. It doesn't matter which way the velocity is, the energy is going to be go like the q squared. So this integral gives us 1 over root twice ep. Then here, p equals q, sets those two energies equal, so as we were arguing before, the time dependence drops down here, and this becomes a of q. For the second term, we're going to have a dagger of minus q, and then e to the 2i eq t. And the delta function is gone. Now if we do the same thing for the momentum, we can get something where we basically subtract the term that cancels this one. So you can see that already the plus side 2x is what we should have had here.
Okay.
And that would be the trade. The momentum will let us subtract on this.
Any questions on any of this?
So we're using q for the 4 momentum and also for the 3 momentum? Is that
if I put in an arrow, I mean the 3 momentum.
Okay.
And if I write q without an arrow, I mean the 4 momentum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the less notation, the more properly relativistic it is.
Oh, okay.
And no dot product here is really a 4-dimensional one. If I put a dot product there, I mean the 3-dimensional dot, and I should have red arrows on things. So I will write... You know, if I expand, okay, qx, when we're writing that, it's shorthand for e times t minus 3 vector q dot 3 vector x. So,
okay.
Because these calculations are so long, it's handy to use shortened notation.
Okay.
If they were confusing, just ask and, we'll expand it out.
So I was thinking this was a three vector q. Yeah. Or I mean. Well, okay.
Okay. Now I put the dot. I think that's the 4 dimensional.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. That was very confusing when you first read that. Coming back after Christmas as well. Let's see. Is this a 3 or a 4 dimensional thing? I wrestled with that. When I was looking at it last week. In order to have the double arrow. Time or there got to be a time in there. But this is his notation that just the q times the x is the 4-dimensional Lorentz inner product.
Okay.
We can be more explicit about that if you wanna put more in, we can decide how we want to do it.
I said this before, I thought I was clear about it, but then apparently I'm not.
Yeah. If you go back, earlier in the book, he makes these definitions.
Okay.
He says he's using the notation this way, and he's actually sticking to his word on that.
Okay.
But you'll find different authors use different conventions. So, if you get used to something and use that for the duration. If you pick up another book and want to follow it, you'll have some different normalizations for your A's and A daggers. You'll have different normalizations for spinners. You'll have different sign conventions for the metric, things like that. And it's confusing. You just have to take some time and sort it out to compare any two books on field theory. There's some conventions that hold pretty well across, working high-energy particle systems, say, who do a lot of these calculations. You'll find a lot of these conventions are common there. And then nobody else in the world understands them. So you've got to, at some point, put the answer back in. Okay, is this clear enough? No, good. Okay, great. So, shall we start the perturbation theory and Feynman propagator? Setting up the perturbative expansion. So, let's back up and think where we've gotten and think where we're trying to get. Okay, we're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. What we've done is to write down a general transition amplitude between what we're generally going to take to be asymptotically free in and out states of some sort. We assume enough scattering goes on that all of the particles involved change their momentum, and for most scattering problems, that's neglecting a set of measure zero, that's fine. So we're not going to run into trouble. So we have a final state connected by the S matrix to the initial state. And we've written that in terms of vacuum expectations of time-ordered products of fields. So we have a product of a bunch of phis here, and then zero. And let's see, these are a bunch of under a bunch of integrals. Products of integrals, each of these phis, as it, let me just for now call it 1 to n, but, you know, phi 1 is a function of some x1, and that's a four-dimensional x, and so on. It's convenient to have in and out things described by x's and y's, but these phis are all some different coordinates. But now, if we want to actually compute this, you know, phi is a complicated thing. It starts at time loss towards minus infinity, phi starts out being some free field, and we solve for the free field. That's a simple thing, but now it interacts. So now the Hamiltonian that governs the time evolution of phi is some particle thing that couples to a bunch of photons and things, so this thing can be absorbing and emitting photons. Those functions become fairly horrendous. You have no idea what those functions are. Solving those coupled field equations classically is not something we can just simply write down. It's complicated. It's something that we'll find in quantum theory gives us, in fact, an infinite surface. What we would like to do is to write these in terms of the free field, and then some perturbation that we can actually calculate. So we want to modify this expression so that we have some kind of expression in terms of those free fields that we do know. Well, the way we get from those asymptotic fields to the fields at some time t, when these things are all changing particles, is to progress the time forward with the time evolution operator. So if we have e to the, let's say, minus I over h bar Hamiltonian t minus t zero, that acting on a state at some state a at time t zero is going to give our state a time t. So we have a time evolution operator. It depends on the full Hamiltonian, which is complicated. That's what makes it hard. This thing is not simple. But we have a way to at least write what the state looks like at these intermediate times. What we want to do is replace these phis by this sort of operator and the initial time state. So we'll re-express this in terms of the field or initial states or initial raising and lowering operators at t goes to minus infinity times some unitary operators that contain how the thing evolves. These unitary operators ideally will depend on just the interaction. If the interaction is small compared to the unperturbed Hamiltonian, then we can turn these exponentials into a Taylor series in the interaction. Now to do that, what we need to do is separate the Hamiltonian into a free Hamiltonian plus an interaction Hamiltonian. And the way we can do that most cleanly is going to what's called the interaction picture. I talked about this earlier. This is where we evolve all the operators with H naught, leaving the only difference from those operators being something that depends on the interaction. So it's going to allow us to separate these out and write some time evolution operators that really just depend on this interaction part of the Hamiltonian in a specified way. So our next goal is to carry that out. And that's the subject of section 5.3, which let's just start in on. The interaction picture operators are sandwiched between 547 there. They're operators sandwiched between some of these exponentials. So phi interaction, I'll put an I on it to denote the interaction picture. It's midway between Heisenberg and Schrodinger. What we do is sandwich IH naught T minus T naught with our regular phi and another IH zero T minus T naught. And this is phi at time T naught and position X. So if there were no interaction, this is how phi would evolve. So we're always going to be comparing the interacting phi to what phi would have evolved to in the absence of those interactions. And we're going to do the same thing with the Hamiltonian. But let's see how this progresses. We have the free field expansion. We had it written down a few minutes ago. Let me not write it unless we're going to need it. The full time evolution is given with the full Hamiltonian. So, in fact, phi of x and t can be written as e to the I h t minus t naught and phi the original time and position x times e to the minus I h t minus t naught. But I want to replace this by h t minus t naught. Now, I want to stick this phi I in. Well, to do that, I need to multiply by this and its inverse. So I'm going to put it either the minus I h naught t minus t naught times either the plus I h naught, and then phi I. And then on this side, I need to pull this out, so it's going to leave in e to the plus I h naught t minus t naught. And then finally, we have the full Hamiltonian time evolution t minus t naught. All right, well, writing all that out seems a little tedious. you can't combine those exponentials.
Right.
Because things don't commute.
So is the H stuff the not, is that the interaction term? Hamiltonian. Is that right?
This is the full Hamiltonian.
Oh, okay.
This is the one.
Okay.
If the Hamiltonian was like constant, the interaction term constant, and everything commuted with everything, these two would combine to give H minus H naught, and that would be the interaction Hamiltonian. But because H and H naught may not commute, probably don't, you can't combine those immediately. But it's more or less as close as you can get to the thing we'd really like to be writing here. So this looks very much like the e to the I H interaction times the time change times the interaction of picture phi times e to the minus I H interaction. It's not quite that exactly, but we'll be able to manipulate it into a form where it'll do as well.
The two exponentials on the left commute with each other, though.
No. Okay. For example, let's take the simplest case. Suppose we have free scalar fields. All right. The unperturbed Hamiltonian. Let's see. This is the Lagrangian.
Like pi and pi.
It's pi squared plus a grad pi plus a grad pi term, and then something like that. The unperturbed Hamiltonian, and then we've got an m squared pi squared. So this is h zero. Maybe there's an overall half here. I think that's what we get.
Pi squared plus pi dot pi.
The interaction part of the Hamiltonian, well, it could be anything, but let's just take this this pi to the fourth picture. Right, that's as good as any. And I think we pick up a minus sign when the Lagrangian has a lambda pi to the fourth, so the Hamiltonian will be minus that. So let's look at that picture. Now, the point to notice here is that H0 is quadratic in the field of semiconjugate momentum, which means it's quadratic in the A and A daggers. Phi 4 is quartic in the A's and A daggers. You know, all sorts of orders and stuff, well, maybe we normal order, but you've got a whole product of A's and A daggers here, you've got a product of A's and A daggers here. Let's all commute with one another. So, this goes like, A dagger squared and, A dagger A and stuff like that. This goes like A dagger to the fourth and A dagger cubed and A and stuff like that.
But my question, though, is that those two, just the two exponentials on the left, you busted up that H with no subscript is H naught plus H sub I.
Yes.
But you could have put the H, the minus H, minus I, H naught on the other side just as easily as if you could have put it.
Let's see. Those two exponentials.
Because what I'm saying is on the left, you picked the H naught on the right. On the right, you picked the H naught on the left. Just so that you could get the interaction part in the middle. But
Right. I inserted.
Nothing.
What I'm doing is inserting here e to the minus I h naught t minus t naught e to the plus I h naught. This is one I'm inserting. And I'm inserting it right here so that I can associate this one with that phi and turn it into the phi I. I'm doing the same thing. The conjugate. So take the dagger and insert it there. So these two in the opposite order inserted here. And then this one times phi times the conjugate one there, that gives me phi I.
Gotcha.
You see it? Everybody see it?
Yeah, you multiply it by both sides. Phi I is there in the first equation, right?
Yeah. So it looks like I've made it become much more complicated.
Okay.
Right? But yeah, so I put a string of three operators here and three operators here, and I collect the inner ones to make the pi i.
Okay.
Good. Other questions? So all I've done is insert an identity and it's made it look horrible. And you know, we're hoping through some magic that somebody fortunately figured out 50 years ago that this was actually going to boil down to something nice. It will.
So
yes.
So why is it that if they don't commute, you can, what's the theorem behind that? If they don't commute, you can't just combine the exponentials?
Or, yeah. Or? Okay. Expand this out in the power series. Expand this out in the power series. Now I have all powers of this whole mess. And those messes don't commute.
Right.
So I can't reassemble that into, you know, this plus that to some power. Because there are all those commutators as well. And that's only a piece of it. You need the Campbell-Baker-Hausdorff theorem to combine those. So you could write this as this, either that this plus the commutator of one of them with the commutator, plus an infinite string of commutators. That can be done, but it's we're going to get finger tricks in that. What we want to do is study this operator. Okay, let's find out some properties of that combined operator. And those are going to be what we need. Okay, so let's define U of T and T naught to be just that product of operators. Let me be sure of the signs. I want to define it to be the one on the right. So plus A on this one. So that's going to be U. So E to the I. What's the H bar? All of these have a one over
H bar.
Okay.
I'll put them
in. You know how you tell. You've got an energy times a time. Planck's constant. It's on the uncertainty relation. You have a P dot X, Planck's constant. You know, right away. You can jump on those. So, H naught, P minus P naught, E to the minus I, H, P minus P naught. Okay. Now, the thing, something that often works would be just to write a differential equation that they satisfy. Often the differential equation is just something you can integrate, even though that's ghastly. It satisfies a fairly simple differential equation that we can work with. Let me write the result here. We have our field at a general time now written as U dagger T C naught times phi of in the interaction picture at that's going to be a time t, and u of the t naught is t, yeah, phi of t. Good, and we can't combine the exponential, but let's look at the time derivative of this thing. That's actually not as bad as it might be. I u dt. Now, when you differentiate something like e to the I h naught t minus t naught, you're gonna be pulling down an H naught. H naught does commute with the exponential of H naught, because H naught commutes with itself. So I can pull down an H naught on either side here. When I differentiate here, I can pull down the H on either side, and it's convenient to pull them into the middle. So the time derivative, I get derivative of this, time derivative of that, and you can see that I get H naught T minus T naught pulling down, but I H naught here, let's see, I've got another I overall, so I'll end up with a minus sign somewhere, and E is a minus I H T and then I differentiate the second one, and I'm going to pull down a minus I in the full H, and I'm going to pull that down to the left. I can't pull it past this, but I can pull it into the either side of this exponential. E to the I, H naught, T minus T naught, I, H. E to the minus I, H, T minus T naught. And close the bracket. Then the I is giving me an overall minus 1, so it's that one minus this one. So we have E to the I, unperturbed Hamiltonian, T naught. Then we have H minus H naught. Ta-da! There's our H interaction. So H minus H naught, I flip the sign, becomes the interaction part of the Hamiltonian. And then we have E to the minus I H T minus T naught. Anybody guess what we're going to do next? This is a general definition. In the interaction picture, this is how anything in the interaction picture is written as a field in this form. So that H of interaction, that's still back in the old Heisenberg picture. I'm going to insert an identity and write H sub I as... So I want to insert an identity here in the form of E to the minus I, H naught, T minus T naught, E to the plus I, H naught, T minus T naught. And that does two things at once. This exponential with H interaction and that exponential gives me the interaction Hamiltonian in the interaction picture, which we just call H sub I. Then what we're left with is U again, because we have this plus free Hamiltonian with the minus H, that was U. So, a fairly simple differential equation for U. Does everybody see how I got it? Yeah, Juan.
Well, we take the derivative of this H. It doesn't matter in what place we set the H node, H.
Right, that's true. Because, notice, E to the I, H, H not T, let's say. So let's say we want to differentiate that. Right? I can write that as dt of the exponential defined as in terms of the power series. So I have I H naught T to the M. And now I differentiate that. Well, H naught commutes with itself. So I can move an H naught back and forth through this, no problem. What this turns out to be is 1 over n factorial. Then I pull down an M, and I get I H to the N times T to the N minus 1. Let's see, what do I do here? I pull out, sorry, it's H naught. Now I can pull out one of these H naughts, I can pull it out to either side. Right, they all commute with one another. So in this case, I'm going to pull out the I H naught to the left. I'm left with 1 over n minus 1 factorial I H naught T to the n minus 1. That's an exponential again, it's just shifted the index. So this is just I H naught E to the I H naught T. I could just as easily have pulled this out on the right. It just depends on H naught commuting with itself, not with some other operator. So note, even though it's some big complicated operator, anything commutes with itself. Does that help? Any other questions?
How is H different from H interaction? Or is that the same thing?
Oh, let me define it. This is what I mean with an I subscript. So let me write it down here. I meant to finish that. Where A sub of I is shorthand for e to the I H naught T minus T naught H interaction. So that's our original interacting Hamiltonian, e to the minus I H naught T minus T naught. So it's all of that. Right. That's the same thing we did with the field.
Oh,
we do that with all the interaction picture operators.
Okay.
Other questions?
How is this halfway between Heisenberg and Schrodinger?
Schrodinger, the operators are independent this time. Heisenberg, they evolve with the full Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Here we only evolve them with the free Hamiltonian. You see this even in quantum mechanics. We like to factorize that stuff. In fact, that'd be a good place to read about this if you're, fed up with Maggiore at any point. Go back and read some Thackeray. There are other books. Petkin and Schroeder do a nice job. From everything I hear, a very good field theory book. They're older ones, but lay out things a little more a little more carefully. Okay. So, how are we doing?
Okay, got it. I understand.
Good. I think what we want to do now is solve that differential equation. Well, the solution is, you can get to the solution to that equation. We're good here. And, if you're right, this is what I sketched last week. We have I du dt is H interaction u. And if those were just numbers or functions or something, you would think that u of t and t naught is equal to the exponential of multiply by minus I, so there's a minus I here, so a 1, a minus I. H interaction, t minus t naught, that's not quite right. What we need is time ordering. Let's see. Okay. He's finally putting in the integral. Back up. It's sort of 1 over u du dt, except you can't really do this, it's minus I hi. So what you do, this is ddt of log u. There's no guarantee that these things exist, right? These are operators. But if u was just a function and h some function of time, this is what you would do. You'd write this as minus I times the integral of h of I of some t prime dt prime from, let's say, t0 to t. And then you exponentiate. So you would say u of t in reference to t naught is the exponential. This is ddt of the log, so you integrate in time and you solve for the log, minus I integral t naught to t h I t prime dt prime. Now, he's avoided doing this, but in fact, in order to do this where you're integrating over h, this is what I went through a little bit carefully last time. I did like the second order to show that you really need time ordering here. Okay, so in fact, not is the time ordered product, e to the minus I, t naught to t, hi of t prime t.
So this is the right answer.
How did you get that? Yeah. It's like the curly dt, partial dt, the same as the total dt over here that we're saying. It's kind of, it seems like you're kind of doing like what is it?
Oh, let's see. Do we have? Okay, here it's there's a phi in here, and phi depends on position. So technically, you know, I think what we're doing. That h depends on phi, which depends on position, but h is the Hamiltonian density integrated over d3x, so that h probably just depends on t at this point. So why do we write maybe you're thinking of it as depending on two variables, t and t naught. In any case, t is the only variable we're interested in at the moment. I probably could have written a total derivative here, but we are going to write this Hamiltonian as the spatial integral of the Hamiltonian density before long. So there are implicitly some other variables in there. When you build h out of phi, this is an integral over fields that depend on x and t. We've integrated those out here, so maybe that's a total derivative. And then this is just how you would solve it, except that it's operators. So the operator problem occurs, right? Over here we were okay because we just had the exponential of h, and all those, you know, we weren't solving a differential equation, we were just differentiating, and that's h is some times t. So all of the h's are the same, and that's mu. But here, if you're integrating over time, all right, this exponential contains a product of these integrals. And one integral, okay, in the middle of this range, this h depends on one time, and then in the middle of the next integral's range, it depends on h at a different time. Those don't matter. So that's why we need the time ordering. We want to write these all as integrals over the full range, but we need to do it in a way that respects the fact that those agents at different times do not commute. Now, do you want me to run through that argument again, or I have a feeling you do? but tell me. Or, remember what we did? I drew the integration region for a plane for the quadratic case, and so that each half contributed the same, so I could write them as integrals over the full range on both t prime and t double prime with a factor of a half. And time ordering, so this integral times that integral as long as this t was after that t, and then the other way around for the other one. I'll run through it again if you want to see it, but enough of you are nodding, you remember, but I'm not sure I need to. We okay with that? It's done in a number of books. He doesn't do it here, but I wouldn't be surprised if actually I did that. I'm not sure if he does or not, but some quantum books show that, and when we get into field books. So if you have questions on that, we can come back to it. But time ordering, and you can write it as the exponential. So given that, well, that's the solution. We have a time ordered product of this exponential, t naught t, h interaction at t prime, t prime. Well, okay, so what is this? That h interaction is times dt is probably small compared to Planck's constant, we hope. Because the interaction Hamiltonian depends on, say, the Planck structure constant or some small coupling constant, that means we can do do the Taylor series for this exponential, and order by order, we're just looking at some time-ordered product of fields, because H is built out of the field. Maybe some derivatives of the field, but the interaction Hamiltonian doesn't even always depend on derivatives.
in the example I gave earlier where we had lambda phi to the fourth as or minus lambda phi to the fourth as the interaction Hamiltonian, you know, this is just each of these is just the product of four phis. So order by order in perturbation theory, we have 4 to the n product of phi time ordered. Remember, the thing that we're actually trying to compute is this expectation value of something that's already a bunch of time ordered phi. So this is just going to add more phi to the list. So we're going to finally get to a point where those vacuum expectation values of time ordered products of phi of t, that's going to turn into order by order in perturbation theory, a time ordered product of free field phi with some tough stuff. So then we're at something we can actually compute. I guess this counts as computing. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is look at that. Have you got to? Right. Let's look at the expectation value we're trying to compute and stick in the appropriate time evolution operators and see what we can do with them. Turns out we'll be able to arrange things so it comes out okay. So what we want is back to expectation value of a time-ordered product of n fields. Phi of x1 through phi of xn. And we now can write phi of any of the x's as, well, something like this, right? It's a u dagger of, all right, so this is the time t1. So we're going to t1 from some t0, let's say, and then we have the interaction picture phi, and we have this u of t1 t0, again. T1 and t0. Okay, so that's what phi of x1 is. And here, this is still at the variable x1. This is just the interaction picture. So, once again, what is this? This is the field at time t1, but it's the free field evolved at time t1, not the fully interacting field at time t1. The interactions have been stuck in t2. So this whole thing we want, product of a bunch of these, is now going to have a whole bunch of u's in it. U dagger t1 t0 phi I at x1 u of t1 t0 u dagger of t2 t0 phi interaction x2 u t2 t0, and set them into space, just their velocity. So we're going to keep inserting these things all the way to u dagger of tn t0 by interaction at x of n and u of Cn not close friend back to magnification. So it's something like that. Well, too bad. And what we can do now is combine these U's. U dagger just amounts to changing this sign. And, the ace of termination. Changing that sign is equivalent to interchanging the order of integration. So let's notice that U dagger of, say, T1 and T0 is the same thing as if we reverse those, which is just interchanging the argument. So it's the same as U of T0 and T1. So that's going to turn out to be convenient, because what we can do is flip this one, and then we've got a U from T1 to T0 times a U from T0 to T2. That'll turn out to combine into a single U. This one takes things from this time to that, the next one takes it from that time to some other time, and it's the same as the one that takes you from the initial to that final time. We'll prove that. It takes a little calculation here. But let's make this claim. Okay, let me leave the calculation and we'll go there. So let me work out that claim here. Let's write that differential equation. U dt is hiu. So I'll claim that product of two of these guys, u of t1 t0, u of t0 t2 is the same as u of t1 t2. I'm thinking that's the right thing. Yeah, that's right. So, if we think of this as... let me drop the T1 here. This involves three times. T, T0, and T2. Same expression, and just simpler to not carry another substrate. So, if I write ddt of this whole thing, this first one is the only one that depends on t. So this is equal to I du of t and t0 dt times u of t0 t2. And we know that this is equal to H interaction times U of T T0. And then this is coming along for the ride. But notice what that is. This whole thing reoccurs here. So from first to last, I've just rewritten the differential equation that is satisfied by U. So the only question is, this has got to be some U. It's got to depend on T, and in fact, it depends on T2, but let's not presuppose, let's think of a name for this thing. What should we call it? Let's call it D. Okay, so what we have is I, D, and D depends on what? Possibly T, and possibly T0, and possibly T2. So I, D, T of D equals HI times D of D, T0, T2. Now, we know the solution to that. The only issue is the initial condition. Right? The only way you get, you know, different solutions to this. The solution we wrote, T naught is E or minus I over H interaction integral T prime from T naught to T. Okay, when T equals T naught, that integral runs from T naught to T naught, so it's zero. And so you just get one. So this is with the initial condition T naught equals zero. So when I set T equal to T naught, I get one. Here, the initial condition, right, so we know we're going to get something of the form V of T, the various T's, is still going to be E to the minus psi over H R integral over some range of interaction Hamiltonian T prime dT prime. But if I integrate from T naught to T, that's not going to do it. Because when I set T naught equal to T, the first factor becomes 1, but I still have U of T naught to T2. So the initial condition is that V at, when I set T equal to T naught, that has to be equal to what? Well, if this thing evaluated T naught, this is 1, this is U of T naught to T2. Well, I get that if I put T2 down here. So now if I set T equal to T naught, I have the integral from T2 to T naught, and that is just U of T naught to T2. So I satisfy the initial condition. That's just on fixed range, so you know that's my integration constant. But now I recognize this as U of T T2. So there's the proof of it.
It's still time ordered, right? Everything here is time ordered.
Time ordered, yeah. Yes. Thanks. Yeah, all these exponentials have to be time ordered.
Okay.
So, yeah. Here it is.
Other questions? What is the function of T? What are the variables that you need that?
Well, T,
you have T0 listed twice, that's why I asked.
Oh, that's the initial condition. Okay, so V a priori, V depends on T and T naught and T2. Because we just define it to be this. But what we've shown is that it has to satisfy, you know, this V, whatever it is, has to satisfy this differential equation with that initial condition that when we set T equal to T naught, the result is what's left here because that's not all I want. So the solution of this equation with that initial condition is just U of T to T2, and it doesn't depend on what T naught was. So that's actually mysterious dependence in the middle. Yeah, that one doesn't have to be there, it turns out. But that's what we proved. Other questions? Yeah?
You said that the initial condition for you is U of T, no.
Wrong.
Zero.
One. Second. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be one. Because, yeah, that integral goes to zero.
Oh.
Right. And so the exponential is one. Okay.
Other picture.
Yeah, we're going to burn it up a bit here. Sorry about that. I can make it either one if you want to see your picture.
I'll make it a math BB and then, yeah.
All right. So now we can go back to our expression here and simplify it. Let's use what we've got. So this equals vacuum expectation value, time ordered product. We've still got this one on the left. U dagger T1 T naught. Phi I X1. But now this pair, remember what we do. We, in place of the dagger, we write this as T naught T2. We reverse the order. And then these two combine to be a U of T1 to T2. So this is kind of cool. It's just the thing it takes to connect this phi I with the next one. So the U that goes between these is the U that connects that time to this time. That's kind of sensible. And then, you know, we'll have a U of T2 to T3 here, and a phi interaction of X3, and so on, all the way down to a phi interaction of Xn, and a final extra U of Tn and T0, close friend, vacuum expectation. So somehow the expression didn't get any shorter, even though we combined it. I guess I wrote it in an extra one, just to give you risk practice. Now, let's see. We, we want to bracket this by some values of t, some large value of t. So this is just a trick to get those n's right. So let's see. For the next step here, we're gonna let what do we have u. Oh, right, way over there on the right, we have u of Tn and T0. And I want to write that as a product of two u's. Just sticking in an arbitrary intermediate one. So I can write this from our calculation over here as Tn down to, I think minus T is what Maggiore uses, minus T to T naught, let me check. The idea here being that, yeah, that T, T being much greater than T1, T2, any of the intermediate times. So the number T is really large. So minus T is a really early time. And, you know, what we want is, we want the absolute, we want T to be much bigger than the absolute values of these, in fact, positive or negative. So let's just be precise about that. And then, I think we have to stick the other one in. U dagger, U dagger on the other end, we have T1, T0. And that's the same as u of t0, t1. And now I write that using the product as u of t0 to t and u of t to t1. And then I can flip this one to be a u dagger from t to t0 on the extreme end, and that puts a really large time way at the left and a really early time way at the right. Then we can choose that t, in fact, to be anything we want, and we're going to choose it for our convenience. This is just a way to systematically deal with that end stuff. So once again, our expression. we have, right, the U dagger becomes, right, this will be a U dagger of T and T naught. I mean, T and T naught, yeah, okay. Then, the next term, we have a U of T and T1, but let me bracket this off. U of T, T1, phi I, x1, U of T1, T2, etc., down to phi interaction, xn, and then we have U of, what did I do here, Tn, and minus T, and then one extra one, U of minus T, and T naught. And that's the end of the time ordering. And that's it. Good. Minus T to T naught. Good. Got it. Okay. Now, the the term in brackets is time ordered. Right? Each term in the bracket in time lies, you know, between its neighbors. So that stuff in the bracket is in fact already time ordered. But what we're going to do is untime order it, because we've got a time ordering operator out here. So in fact, we can write those operators in any order we like. And what we're going to do is put all of these U's together and combine them into a single U. And that'll be nice to think. And then we just need to choose T to be something convenient. So, okay. Yeah, I think we can just do that. Okay, so everybody see it? The time ordering, each of these things is an exponential of the interaction Hamiltonian. The interaction Hamiltonian is some product of fields. So what we're going to do, you know, basically expand these things term by term. And so all of this is going to be some time ordered product of fields. Up to that time order. Since we're going to have to time order them anyway, it doesn't matter what order we write these, as long as we keep the big T here, because they're going to shuffle anyway. So I bring all of the U's clear to the right. And notice that each adjacent pair of U's combine. So this one times that one is a UT to T2. Or with the next one of UT to T3. So what we're going to end up with is ultimately, I think I have room enough to write it here. Let's try that. Let's see. Let's move it up.
Go on, arrow.
Lagging expectation, time ordered product. Of, we still have a U dagger here. Then we have a whole bunch of phi's. And then all of the U's in the brackets combine to give U from T to minus T. And then finally we have U minus T naught. Close bracket. Vacuum expectation.
We lose the I in the front.
Where? Do we have an I somewhere?
Subscript.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's something
interaction.
Yeah, that was the point, wasn't it? to get those in terms of something we can compute. Pi I is something we can compute. It depends only on the free field in the initial state and the free field evolution operator. So we know what those are in principle. Okay, now this U is e to the minus pi over h bar integral minus d to t h u prime d q prime. That's the interaction Hamiltonian, which we also know. And we're probably going to let those limits go off to infinity. Let's see. I think he chooses minus t to b t naught. So minus t is going to be the same as t naught is going to be minus infinity. So plus t is going to be plus infinity. I believe those are the limits he ends up with after fussing about it a little while. So, yeah. T equals minus T naught, T goes to infinity. All right. So this is going to become T to minus pi over H naught integral minus infinity to plus infinity H of D prime. And then the U of minus T and T naught is going to be, all right, we set those equal, so that U of T naught is 1. So this one goes away. And then we have a U dagger at the front, that T and T naught, all right, what's that turn into? Well, T is going to be infinity, and T naught is going to be minus infinity. So, let's see. Why do we have that? Yeah. Okay, we've got a T and a T naught dagger there. Yeah, we've got this right. So what's going to happen? The left side. Okay, I see. Now, we're going to let those guys act on the vacuum state. So these infinite ones are going to act on the vacuum. And what are they going to give? So if you time up all the vacuum from minus infinity to plus infinity.
To a vacuum?
It goes to the vacuum. Up to a state.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to keep track of the state. But other than that, all those can do to the vacuum is change the state. That U dagger from minus infinity to plus infinity won't do anything else. So let me write this again somewhere. We're good over here, right? We seem to fairly reliably be covering 2 pages a day. Okay, so U acting from minus infinity to infinity on the vacuum is, you know, going to be either some phase with our vacuum.
How do we get a phase of just the identity? Oh, wait, never mind.
Okay. And then I'm going to get the same phase he writes here. So, let's see, there's the Hermitian conjugate. So, sorry. What he's saying is that U acting infinity to minus infinity on the vacuum is e to the I alpha times back. Right. That's good. So if we act with the dagger, I'm wondering why the U dagger one doesn't create the opposite phase and make it go away. And I don't see what he's done with it. So he writes that. And, okay, so the Hermitian conjugate is conceived. Right, there's two of these. Form. Oh, okay. There's that. But I still don't see. Oh, all right. He leaves one of them in. Okay. All right. So, going the other way, we have U dagger, infinity minus infinity. It's going to be e to the minus I alpha 0. So e to the minus I alpha can be written as just an expectation value of the dagger, infinity to minus infinity. Okay, so which is an expectation value of this thing. So, 0, e to the, one the conjugate, so plus I, integral minus infinity to infinity, hi, c prime, d prime. Okay, so a maximum expectation value of that is our e to the minus I alpha. Or 1 over this. Okay, this is convenient. I mean, this what we're doing is producing a convenient normalization. So, e to the minus I alpha arises here with this acting. Right, these times are way less, so we're okay with the time order. And this acting on the vacuum is going to give 1 over a phase. And the phase is this expectation. Then what's left is this operator and does he have two of them in there? He might have two of them. Fine, man. No. All right. We got to go right now. I'm still not seeing what he's done with the second phase. There's a time ordered. Let's start that next time. It's convenient to keep track of this in a nice way because it's good to have a relative normalization. So we're going to write this thing as a fraction with this thing as the denominator. And that's convenient. But other than that, We've really got the answer that U that takes everything from minus T to plus T, sandwiched together with a bunch of interaction phi. Everything here is built out of the interaction picture field or the interaction picture Hamiltonian, both of which we can compute in terms of free field and the free Hamiltonian. This is now something we can compute. We can do it. So we'll figure out the phase next time and lay it down.